from KQED.
This is the California Report from San Diego. I'm John Sepulvedo.
And I'm Lily Jamali in San Francisco. We've got a great podcast in store. We're going to hear from Steve Wozniak's wife on the passing of tech legend Paul Allen.
And in just a few moments, we're going to hear a response from Democratic challenger to Republican Duncan Hunter, Amar Campanajari. Is going to talk about what his mom thought when she heard some of the smears that were being used against him.
Great question from John. I'm really looking forward to listening to that. But first, we begin with family separation, our ongoing coverage of that important issue. Tomorrow is the first day on the job for an independent monitor. She's tasked with making sure that the federal government follows court orders when it comes to treating migrant kids humanely. But the Trump administration is pushing back. They're asking a federal judge in L.A. to limit how much power she has. KQED's Farida Jabala Romero reports.
Judge Dolly G appointed former U.S. Attorney Andrea Sheridan Orden to investigate violations of a court settlement known as the Flores Agreement. Those complaints include children being drugged without proper consent and detained in substandard border facilities. Now, the U.S. government is asking Judge G to exempt from Orden's investigation the agency that cares for most unaccompanied migrant children. But Office of Refugee Resettlement Facilities must be monitored so children can be protected, says Holly Cooper with the UC Davis Law School.
You know, we do have evidence already that there's consistent, pervasive violations, and we're very concerned.
Orden's work begins as the Trump administration is reportedly considering asking parents to agree to indefinite detention with their kids or have their children taken away from them. Cooper worries parents would be coerced into waiving their children's rights.
You know, the government has a history of telling people, you know, sign here without giving people a meaningful opportunity to understand their rights.
Under the Flores Agreement, Judge G has ruled children can't be detained for more than 20 days in immigration and customs enforcement jails. For the California Report, I'm Farida Jabala Romero in San Francisco.
We're going to move on now to a story we've been following closely here in San Diego County, and that's the 50th District Congressional race between Republican Duncan Hunter and Democratic challenger Amar Campanajar. You might remember Hunter is under federal indictment for misusing campaign funds. Well, as the details of that indictment continue to come out, Hunter has turned to attacking Campanajar's Palestinian heritage. Hunter has called Muslims, quote, disgusting. And just this weekend released a letter from three former Marine generals who wrote that Najjar is, quote, a member of the Najjar family in the Middle East, members of which have been heavily involved in major terror operations and massacres. The letter goes on to ask the reader whether they trust Najjar not to hand over state secrets to, quote, his relatives. Campanajar has a White House security clearance when he worked in the Obama administration. He is U.S.-born, a native to San Diego County. He tells me he was expecting Hunter to make his race an issue in this campaign.
On an emotional level, you know, I was ready for it. And then when I saw it, I'm like, this would be funny if it wasn't so sad. Like, because it just shows, first of all, he's threatened, right? I don't pose a national security risk, but I sure as hell pose a risk to his seat. And the fact that an incumbent has to mention his opponent's name tells you everything. The pennies he's pinching together that he has left, after spending all of his money on legal fees, he's using it to give me more name ID. So in a way, thank you. And also to just show people who he really is. And when someone shows you who they are, you believe them.
Are you finding people that agreed with Duncan Hunter's ad?
Only the ones that he, like, you know, that like are best friends with his dad and maybe his drinking buddies. But to be honest, we've had Republicans who came to our office who said, we never were going to vote for you. But now Hunter's just gone too far. Like, there are policy issues he could have attacked you on. He decided to attack you on you as a person, as an American. You're still one of us. You're an American. And we have to defend who you are as an American. But we could disagree on policies all day. But Hunter has chosen to go so low that to vote for him is to be racist.
Your mom see that ad?
Yeah, she was...
What did she say?
She was so mad. Oh. She was really mad. My mom said, she's like, there's 13 countries you can't go to now because they'll kill you.
What do you mean? Why?
Well, because I'm Christian. And so there are countries, my mom said, you can't go to Saudi Arabia because you used to be Muslim and now you're Christian. She's like, what Hunter doesn't understand is that he's putting this out there and he's putting you in danger. She said, I'm not worried about, like, rednecks. I'm worried about if you go to one of these countries and they find out, that you are an apostate, they'll kill you. You know, my mom is a worried mother. I'm like, you're a little bit overdramatic, mom, but that's where her head was at. She's like, now everyone knows that you were raised Muslim for a couple of years, and then dad took off when you were six, and then I raised you as a Christian. And apostasy, you could be killed. And I don't feel particularly at my life's at threat here, but my mom did make a good point about abroad.
That was the 50th District Congressional candidate, Amar Campa-Najjar.
And John, I have to wonder, is that the first time that Campa-Najjar has cursed on the record? He was clearly very upset when you asked about his mom's reaction.
He actually cussed a lot. Before the recorder got started, he had a lot of choice words for Duncan Hunter. And part of it, too, is not just, I mean, Campa-Najjar, this district, one of the things we haven't been able to get into is very heavily Chaldean. These are Christian people of Middle Eastern descent. Campa-Najjar went to a Chaldean church for quite some time. And so they are often characterized as Muslims as though that's something, first of all, to be ashamed of. And second of all, they're not seen for who they are, which is a different group within this larger Middle Eastern family. So the point here is that there's a lot of anger and there's a lot of stoking of longstanding tension that has existed in this district in these slurs we're seeing. And the other thing, too, is just, you know how moms are. I mean, that's you know how moms are.
Yeah, absolutely. And a great blog post, by the way. Please check that out on kqed.org from John on this very story. We're going to head north now to Arcata. A year and a half ago, a 19-year-old African-American student at Humboldt State was stabbed to death at an off-campus party. His name was David Josiah Lawson, and his killing remains unsolved. This week, students at several Cal State campuses are rallying, demanding justice for Josiah. KQED's Sandia Dirks was at a protest at San Francisco State yesterday.
Students are outraged by claims that the local white 22-year-old initially arrested was later let go and that no one has been charged. SFSU student Akilah Floto told her story to a group gathered on campus at Malcolm X Plaza to remember Josiah. She went to community college in Arcata, where Humboldt State is, and she says the largely white population was hostile to students of color. Floto says she was attacked and called the N-word on a public bus.
And I remember breaking down and saying, a white local could just off me. And I could never make it out of Humboldt County. And then a month later, I heard about Josiah, and I just had that, this is what students of color are talking about.
SFSU student Simone Jones, who's part of the Black Student Union, only just learned about Lawson's killing. She says it's a wake-up call.
This should be a message to Black students across the CSUs that we really need to come together now more than ever.
They are asking CSUs to keep students of color safe. Chancellor Timothy White says he's actively pushing for Lawson's case to be resolved. For the California Report, I'm Sandhya Dirks.
The California Report has been following the story very closely, and that has a lot to do with assignment editor Polly Stryker. Polly joins us in the studio this morning. Thanks for being here, Polly.
Thanks for having me.
Mention was made there of a suspect who charges against whom were dismissed. What happened there?
So basically, his defense attorneys decided not to waive time, which means that a preliminary hearing had to happen fast. And it's a legal tactic that is used sometimes. And it forced the police chief, Tom Chapman, and the DA to prepare a case quickly. And they just didn't do a good job of it. And John was there. He interviewed Chapman. And the police chief admitted that they just didn't have enough time and they didn't do a good job.
So new police chief up there. Is there a chance that this suspect might get charged at some point? How likely is that?
Well, DJ Lawson's mother is very hopeful. She's hopeful there'll be a resolution by the end of the year. And she's much more encouraged with the new interim police chief. She says things have been moving much better. It remains to be seen, though, because it's very hard to bring charges again when you've already had charges dismissed. So
That's a great point. It's
an uphill climb.
Polly, thank you so much.
Sure thing.
And we actually spoke with DJ's mother, Charmaine, yesterday to ask how she's doing. She's going to be headed to several Cal State campuses this week to rally with students who are supporting her son. Here she is.
Man, my heart is filled with joy. And I'm so proud. I'm so proud that the students and faculties and staff want to do so much to bring justice for our family and for my son. I am a proud mom, and I say this every day. I'm so proud of my son, DJ, and his accomplishments and just being an amazing young man. Majority of everyone that is rallying for him and showing their support did not know my son. And my heart is filled with joy to see that people give their time unselfishly and want to see justice for him. There's so many bad things that happen when you send your children off to college, and it should not. This is not something that as parents we want to happen. Well, we expect to happen.
Can you give us a sense of what David Josiah was like?
He was kind. He was generous. He was compassionate. He loved life. I mean, he had a smile that would just lit up a room. And he was a great big brother, an awesome son, a great friend. It's difficult to talk about him in the past. It's so hard to talk about him because he was only 19 years old, and he wanted to accomplish so much. He was one in a million. One in a million.
Oh, he sounds like it. Charmaine Lawson, mother of David Josiah Lawson, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much.
Support for the California Report comes from Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose Fund for Strategic Innovation supports transformative ideas that benefit humanity while protecting the natural world, recognizing through science the interdependence of all living systems. The Wesley Foundation, recognizing young social entrepreneurs through the Wesley Prize for Young Innovators of California. And Collective Health. American employers are in the healthcare business. It's time they had the technology to drive it. CollectiveHealth.com.
All right, we're going to move on now and talk about a proposition. Actually, should I call this farm animals, livestock? What's the right term? KQED's Leslie McClurg.
It's animal confinement is how most people are referring to it.
And this year's ballot measure would ban the sale of pigs, veal, and egg-laying hens raised in cages. Instead, farms would have to give animals a specific amount to move around. Did I read that right?
Yeah, a specific amount of space, basically.
Tell me why this measure is different than the one that passed about a decade ago.
Yeah, so in 2008, voters passed Proposition 2, and that was based on animal behavior. So basically the law, the language that was used was animals had to have enough space to stand up, sit down, turn around, and spread either their limbs or wings. Mm. Industry came back and argued and said that was too vague. So what ended up happening is the animals stayed in the cages, but there were just fewer of them. So this is to remove animals from cages altogether.
So this would essentially ensure that all the livestock or farm animals, however you want to say it, they're all cage free.
They're all cage free. Exactly.
Right. Now, we know that this first initial ballot initiative passed at the height. This is when PETA was going into slaughterhouses and going into chicken farms, going into cattle farms here in California. There were a lot of gruesome videos coming out about the way they were treated. What is spurring this politically, this movement now?
Yeah, what's interesting about this is that PETA is actually against this. A few animal groups are. And they say that this will lock into sort of industry that animals will stay in small spaces. Even though they won't be in cages, this will lock them into a specific amount of space.
So how big is that space that we're talking about?
So it's a little different for each animal. It's 43 square feet for a veal calf.
Okay.
It's 24 square feet for a pig, and it's 1 square foot for an egg-laying hen.
Okay, so we know how big a square foot is for a hen. We're talking about a half basketball court for veal and about a quarter basketball court for that pig. How will this hit me, the meat eater? Sorry.
Yeah.
I love myself some pork chops. How is it going to affect my wallet?
For pork, we're not totally sure exactly how.
Come
that,
on.
There's not enough data to totally know. There's not a lot of pork farms in California.
Fair enough.
So what we do know more of and we have data on and what's easy to see in the grocery store right now is eggs. So if you go to the store right now, a cage-free dozen of eggs costs about 50 cents to a dollar more. So That's mostly know. It's significant.
Yeah.
It'll specifically significant for low-income folks.
I was going to say my mom, we were poor growing up, and my mom fed us eggs, because
right.
They were so cheap, and the white styrofoam.
It's cheap protein.
Yeah. Leslie McClurg, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And we're going to switch gears now to some sad news in the tech world. Microsoft co-founder Paul Allen died in Seattle yesterday. He was 65 and passed away after a battle with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. Allen is being hailed this morning as a founding father of personal computing. Despite Microsoft's rivalry with its Cupertino-based competitor, Apple co-founder Steve Wozniak was a friend. His wife, Janet, spoke with us about how Woz heard the news.
He was on stage in Melbourne, Australia, getting ready to speak, and the moderator, you know, broke the news, and he was quite upset and shed some tears. And, you know, he held it together and did his event, but then he was pretty upset on the way, you know, back to the airport, and he called me. That's when he called me. You know, the thing that's the saddest to me is it kind of reminds me of when Steve Jobs died, because, you know, he was very surprised by that, too, and just it's just bad to lose good people. These are, you know, people that, you know, change the world. They're the Einsteins and the Edisons and the, you know, inventors and the people who make a difference.
And that was Janet Wozniak, wife of Apple co-founder Steve Wozniak. Our thanks to KQED tech editor Tanya Mosley for bringing us that. Another person close to Paul Allen was Oren Etzioni. He is the CEO of the Allen Institute for Artificial Intelligence in Seattle. He joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning.
Paul Allen gave over $2 billion away in his lifetime. And part of that money went to the Allen Institute for Artificial Intelligence. Talk about the Institute and why he felt that was a project worth starting.
Paul was passionate about artificial intelligence since at least the 70s. Before I joined as CEO, I read his autobiography, Idea Man, and I could see that he got it. He understood the problems. He understood how difficult solutions are. And he was fascinated with the topic of semantics. How can a computer understand text at a deep level the way we do?
You've gotten the opportunity to work closely with Paul Allen over the last 4 or 5 years. What's your fondest memory of him?
There are so many little things as you do your work, research papers, results, and so on. And Paul was laser focused on the big breakthroughs, on eye on the prize. And I asked him one time, Paul, what do you mean by a major scientific breakthrough? What are you looking for? And without skipping a beat, he said to me, you know it when you see it.
That was Oren Etzioni, the CEO of the Allen Institute for Artificial Intelligence in Seattle. Before we go, Uber, the ride-hailing company, is one of the world's most valuable startups, if you can still call it that. And this morning, it's got an eye-popping new price tag, $120 billion. That's according to the Wall Street Journal, and it means that Uber, which calls San Francisco home, is worth almost double what it was just a few months ago. Despite recent jitters in tech stocks, Uber looks to be getting ready to start selling shares to the public sometime next year. And that's the California Report podcast for this Tuesday, October 16th. We're a production of KQED Public Radio in San Francisco. I'm Lily Jamali.
And I'm John Sepulvedo. I think I'm John Sepulvedo. Have a great day.
I think so.